On this edition of the Car Jam podcast.
I must say, it was probably not the first time someone had a pee in a bed.
I think it was 70 horsepower or just over. But actually, it was all right. It never felt slow. I mean, it certainly never felt fast.
Relief map at the end is someone's described some body work that I did. A Cliff Richard kind of way. Guys, let's have a little sing-song and see if we can sort this out.
Yeah, we broke into song, danced around the workshop. That's where the title of this episode, Princess and the Pea, came from, because my wife had to live with this not once, but four times.
Hold on to your armrest, kids. Here we stop. Barely sat down and already, apparently, we're on.
Yeah, no messing about today, Mike. Absolutely none.
And we're only a minute late starting as well. Crikey, what's been going on?
We're going to start with pop culture today, Mike.
Are we?
Yeah, oh good.
That's what you think. Maybe I'm going to be rebellious. Maybe we're not. No, go on.
Taylor Swift. What would you say if I said Taylor Swift to you?
Aren't they one of those construction companies that build houses? You used to see that on excavators and dump trucks, didn't you?
No. She
oh.
is a North American pop star born in Nashville.
Right.
A wide repertoire of different styles of music.
Okay.
Let me name a few for you. See if that helps.
Oh yeah, that'll definitely help. Yeah.
I Knew You Were Trouble.
Uh-huh.
Willow. Shake It Off. We're Never Getting Back Together.
Sorry, right, what's Shake It Off about? Yeah, that's sort of half 11 in the pub.
There's a reason for this. Okay, she is worth, I don't know, 300 and something million.
Okay.
She's done. Not to you.
She's been auctioned recently, then, or something.
Yeah, today lot number 400.
They've had to reinsure her for something or other. And they've decided, no, okay.
She lives half-time in America and half-time in the UK in London, Primrose Hill.
Are you stalking her?
Anyway, look, the point of this whole story is I read something in a leading UK newspaper the other day, it was just about she's bought a new car.
Okay.
This is where this is going. She's bought a new car because she's fed up with... being spotted in whatever she drives normally. So she's bought a Nissan.
Right.
I believe she's bought a Nissan Juke, which is... You're not going to know what that is either. Nissan Juke...
Yeah, no, I vaguely do. It's like a small sort of crossover-y SUV 4x4-y thing, isn't it?
Without any fours, yes. Well, no, one set of fours. It's a 4x2.
Like, yeah, it's one of those little crossover 2x2-y things, isn't it?
So it's a faux 4x4. Quite avant-garde in its styling, and the first generation, second one's been watered down a bit. Apparently it's a new one of those. But the article's particularly annoying because I had to read the whole article, yeah, which sort of tells you all about her successes and her songs and all the rest of it, hence I'm so knowledgeable.
You've decided to be annoying here and go all through that before you got to the point, because your life was wasted, so ours had to be as well.
I think it's a Nissan Juke, but one of those
you
annoying news. Yeah, I'm not even certain. No, because the newspaper article's annoying. It goes through this whole, you know, Geschichte story and ends up, you know, just with one picture, and it just keeps referring to it as a motor. You know, she's bought a new motor, you know, so you can probably guess
the paper. This upsets people when you call a motor. Apparently there's a big difference between a motor and an engine.
Oh, yeah, that's irritating. Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those things, like, as we've fallen foul of in the past, like sort of train and steam engine and locomotive and ship and boat are all different things. That's apparently a motor is different to an engine.
Yeah,
you can go away and look that up later and find out the difference, because I can't actually remember what it is, but it is a significant one. Anyway, yes. So Nissan Juke motor. Yeah.
That's it. Finish with that.
Okay.
So that was the pop culture element. Tick. Done. And now I'd like you... I reckon you can tell this story better than I. Princess and the Pea is the name of this episode.
One of your dodgy videos.
Can you tell the Princess and the Pea story, Mike?
Well, again, we're back to shaking it off. Apparently somebody had an Austin Princess and the gents' toilets were closed. And that's how it ended. Well, no, not that. No,
no, no, not
is,
that one.
Is this the princess who had a mattress and it wasn't? It was really uncomfortable. And
absolutely, you're right. Yeah. So well, near enough. Let me flesh out this story.
Presumably a frozen pea.
It wasn't by the end. A castle with an eligible prince in it and his mother. And a stranger knocks on the door, and it's this woman. And she says, cool. Well, I'm a princess. Can I stay? And so to check that she really is a princess, the mother...
The way you used to get free lodgings back in the day. I'm royalty, you know. Oh, we'll come in.
The mother installs, which she had conveniently to hand, 30 mattresses, all on top of each other.
Yeah, it was a mattress sale going on next door. There always is.
Mattress King popped a pea under the under the bottom one and asked the princess in the morning, did you sleep well? And she said, no, I had a terrible night because there was a horrible lump in my bed. And that way, the mother knew that she really was a princess.
I've never understood that.
Well, I mean, because she's used to luxury.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I must say, it was probably not the first time someone had a pee in a bed.
Let's start, shall we? The theme being us folk who notice things in cars that others don't.
Oh.
So could be design faults. Could be just faults with cars that really great. You know,
rather than being really great.
Great, yes, exactly. So I've got a mixture of bodywork, suspension, steering, engine, and design. What have you got?
You don't need me then.
No.
I got a list when I went online last night and just typed in what's the worst design features in cars.
That'll do.
So I can read that out. I can intersperse them like I normally do. I say last night, I mean this morning.
Mike will regale us by reading something.
Yes, because that's how it works. All right, well, I'll kick us off and then you join in. Now, I looked into whether this is actually true or not. I'm not completely convinced that it's as bad as it initially sounded. Mm-hmm. Alfa Romeo Mito, I believe it's pronounced, isn't it?
Yes, hatchback, about 10 years ago.
Evidently, there's some sort of law, I guess, in Italy that you can't just have side lights on. You have to have headlights... Headlights off, main beam, but not just side lights. So if you decide that you want to drive it with side lights, there's a 7 procedure thing you have to do to just get the side lights on.
Really? To downgrade from dipped to side is a 7-step process?
Yes, you have to go into the into the menu and push 7 different buttons just to get the side lights on.
Right.
And I tried and failed to actually find out exactly what the process was, because I'd love to regale you with you go into menu and then you go down to, but evidently on an Alfa Mito it's not just a case of just turning it on to side lights, and there are various forums saying, it's just got headlights and off. How do I, you know, if the sun goes behind a cloud, what do I have to do? And you have to pull over to do it apparently as well. Which probably just as well. So not necessarily a flaw, but
an irritation. I would say you'd think that with manufacturers being forced, and of course for the goodness of their soul, wanting to be as ecologically sound and as economical as possible, running 2 sets of headlamp bulbs, so what, 110 watts, something like that, in old halogen terms, anyway. It seems rather unnecessary, isn't it? You are burning fuel to light those lights. They don't. Mm-hmm. They're not free. So,
right.
Well, no, I'm just saying. But if it's, I suppose if it's an Italian rule, is that right? Do Italian cars all have to have their headlights on? I don't remember seeing.
No, that's not something that I'm definitely saying as fact. Just for once. but evidently that's something, you know, it was a deliberate thing. That's the distinction I wanted to make. I don't think it's something that Alpha thought, oh, we've cocked up there, never mind, they'll never find out. I think it was something they deliberately designed in to say, well, if we're going to put the side lights on, let's make them work for it. Go on, your turn.
Thanks.
Now I've set that up, the big build-up.
you're welcome. I had a wonderful Ford Sierra XR 4x4.
Ooh.
In the Moonstone Blue, which is the archetypal Cosworth colour. Mm, you know, the light blue, yeah.
Don't ask me what the other...
Oh, no. Whoops, sorry.
White and black, I believe.
Yeah, black certainly for the RS500.
But I can't remember what the white or the black was called. So, but yes, that was one of three.
Midnight black and cirrus white. How about that?
Yeah, probably.
That's totally made
chalk
up.
Chalk white and,
Yeah, so it was in the right colour. This when I bought it, it was reasonably old at that point. It wasn't like new, but it was absolutely spectacular. But it was before the values, which now are, enjoying a certain climb. It was way before that. So I don't remember what I paid for it, but it wasn't a whole lot. But it was immaculate, done like 20,000-30,000.
2.8 or 2.9?
2.8. So it was an E-Reg, 88.
Early one.
Yeah. Well,
hatchback or estate, because they built both.
They didn't. The estate, I don't think, was an XR4 before. That was a Gear 4x4.
Now you're saying that, you're quite right. You're actually quite right. It was. Yeah. It was a Gear. It wasn't ever called an XR. I take it back.
No. So the lineage was, you had an XR4i, which was the one with the enormous whale tail on the back, which was only two-wheel drive with the 2.8
engine. And two-piece glass in the back as well.
Two windows. Oh, on the side?
And the sides, yeah. Side windows. Three side windows. That was the only Sierra that had three side windows on each side, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's quite a good-looking car, actually. Anyway, then it became the XR4x4. So this is sort of mid-term, 1988, 87, 88, can't remember now. But just pre, it was 89 or thereabouts, 88, 89, when they changed to the 2.9 engine and the MTX 75 gearbox, different gearbox anyway, to the old Type 9. Type 9 anyway,
yes.
Whatever. Just a really nice car, absolutely immaculate. Loved it to bits, and I had that for quite some time, actually. As my it was just my normal daily everyday car, as a daily is. Took it to the garage to have something done. Can't remember what now. I think it had a little bit of a transmission leak. It always had it, and it dripped onto the hot exhaust, so you always had that burnt gearbox oil smell. It was only a little weep, but I think it went in for that or an MOT or something. Anyway, went picked it up late one night. It was a country garage. Picked it up. Two dents in the rear door.
Ooh.
Oh, no. You know, kind of horrible dents that you could properly see. And because the thing was immaculate, I couldn't live with that. So this is the P underneath the mattresses, obviously. So I took it straight back to the garage and said, guys, look, you know, and I'd known them for years, so they said, yeah.
Cliff Richard kind of went, guys, let's have a little sing song and see if we can sort this out.
Yeah, we broke into song, danced around the workshop.
A bit like Guys and Dolls, only you were really unhappy and they got properly into the swing of it. We're gonna get the dent out. We're gonna. Fiddledy dee, you said. Sort out my back door.
Yeah. Like anyway, they said, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Fair cop. You got us. It happened while
you got us banged to rights, Gov. Yeah. We did the damage.
We'll sort it. So, I don't know. A week or two later, took it back, and then, I mean, this is sort of yokel country stuff, right? And the guy that came in to do the bodywork, I did know he used to. Here's the problem. Used to have a body shop. And he didn't anymore, but they employed him to refinish this area. When it picked up a week later, what a mess. Oh no, this virginal paintwork, you know, which was never been touched. overspray all over the window trims, you know, lines where you could see where it had been masked, paint that didn't quite match and was grainy. And the problem was it had gone from being two sort of golf ball diameter bits of damage to being half the side of the car. And I took it back
like
again.
A relief map of the Andes. Someone once described some bodywork that I did.
Relief map of the Andes. That's good.
Yeah, have you good. Written something in Braille, someone else said.
Anyway, I couldn't live with it, and they said they'd do it again, and I said, you know, absolutely not, because I'll be into doing the roof and the bonnet. Yeah. And, you know.
What we're going to do, sir, is make the rest of it match that door.
Yeah. And that was it. So I actually got shot of it at that point, actually. And I mean, I could have had it done. I know. I got a, what did I get? Ford Scorpio, actually. I was in a bit of a Ford mood at that point. But yeah, sad that went. Anyway, unnecessary damage, but it was just something that I just couldn't live with. It having been perfect, it was never going to be perfect again, and it wasn't my fault, you know. So
I suppose that's something that today, and I guess this is what, probably 15, 20 years ago, was it something like that? As you say, when the values were a lot lower. If you did that today, if you took a classic Ford in somewhere and they did that, there would be hell to pay, because the cars are so valuable now that I talk to people all the time who are doing restorations, and the amount of times they say to the paint sprayer, if it's not somebody they've used before, I want a bit of orange peel. And the sprayers will say, what? I said, no, it's being restored like factory. I don't want it perfect. I don't want it like glass. Mm. When they did XR3s, when they did RS turbos, there was always orange peel along the back wings.
Yeah.
And I want you to do that. And these paint sprayers, unless they work on classic Fords all the time, are saying, but deliberately want me to do a bad job. No, we want you to do it like it's original.
Hmm.
And there is a real pride amongst these guys who say, yeah, it looks exactly like it did in the factory. There's even a little bit of overspray in the wheel arch or whatever.
Yeah. No,
it's bizarre, but
It's a strange concept. Yeah.
But it's a deliberate thing, because they were just production line cars.
I guess you could win Concours, couldn't you, with a bit of orange peel or whatever,
In theory, you should. In theory, and Concours, I don't know if we've discussed this before, but we'll do it again briefly, yeah. Concours, people tend to misunderstand what Concours is. A Concours car is as good as it left the factory, but no better.
Okay.
So Concours, if you put a Rolls-Royce-style paint job perfect on a Fiesta, it's not actually Concours.
Okay.
If it's got a bit of orange peel, if it's got a few sort of... Ford didn't tend to put runs in things, but some manufacturers did. That's Concours. So if your car has a bit of orange peel and the judges are savvy enough to know that where the orange peel tended to be on those cars, then yes, the car with the respray and the orange peel is probably more Concours than the other car if all other things are equal.
I tell you who did nice paint jobs latterly... Rover. Maybe this is just a random spot of a good one, but I don't know. I've always thought that they're you know, later sort of Rover 800s and 75s and whatnot actually looked quite sharp, actually, you know, for mass produced cars. But no paint runs there.
Surprisingly enough, Cadillac didn't tend to do them too great in the 50s. I was looking at someone's car, actually, at the NEC a few years ago, and he was debating whether it was original paint or not. And it was very, very nice. But when I looked in the engine bay, there were runs down the radiator support.
Oh, really?
And he said, oh, you know, he said, I think that's the reason it's not original, because it looks so bad. And I went, wouldn't be so sure. I think that may be the reason it is original.
Yeah, Friday afternoon. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. We should do a show about factories at some point and stories from factories, because they're a legion. But anyway, speaking of American cars, the Chevrolet Cobalt. That had an issue, and this is quite a famous one. This became a court case. But the ignition barrel itself could revolve in the barrel. of the ignition, if you see what I mean. So you could put the key in and the whole thing would just spin.
Right.
But it could do it without being touched. So you'd be driving along and then suddenly the barrel would decide to roll, which would switch off the engine and the power steering.
Yes,
and the airbags, for some reason. Yeah.
I guess they're not live when the ignition isn't on, is there? Is there no need,
is there? A bit of a problem with the Chevy Cobalt. Oh, it's stalled. Oh, I've been horribly injured.
Yeah.
But that was a proper court case. Citroën C3 convertible. Nice little car. Had removable roof rails, as you probably remember. You wind back the roof.
Plural. Pardon, K?
Never had it.
Plural. I'm sure there's a vaccine for it these days. Plural.
Who's she?
Hasn't arrived yet. Plural. You know, that's the model. C3 Plural. Plural. And if Mike, you'd been following Instagram, Car Chum's Instagram, Facebook and Twitter.
Have we got Instagram, Facebook and Twitter?
We sure do. You would have noticed.
I must look at those now.
You would have noticed that I posted a set of pictures of a Plural just the other day, which I walked past.
Ah, and so did you point out what was wrong with the inherent design of the roof?
No.
No.
No, go ahead. Because I don't know.
Something very, very simple. They had removable roof rails, so you could have the entire car just look like a normal convertible, but there was nowhere in the car to store them. So you had to make the decision before you left home as to whether you were going to have the roof up or down for the day.
That's quite a decision to make as well, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It's fine if you sort of live in Arizona or somewhere, or, you know, Siberia, where you got a pretty good idea what the weather's going to do. But if you live in one of the many other countries in the world where sometimes it can rain and then it stops, you were fairly committed to having roof up or down.
You also have to know where you're going to park it, don't you, security-wise? And yeah, so you have to make a whole list of decisions before you actually leave home.
Very good point.
It's a good idea, though. I mean, what a fun idea to have a car which had a fabric roof. Mm-hmm. So you could peel the fabric roof back, or as Mike says, you could remove the side rails, which were sort of elliptical kind of shape,
And presumably there for the structural integrity of the car if you rolled it.
Yes, good point. They're missing for that as well. and then you'd have a full open top. Furthermore, I don't know whether you could remove the back seats or whether you could just fold them, but you effectively ended up with a pickup truck. You know, so it was a really good, fun, creative car. But let's be honest, it's a second car, isn't it? And there's the irony. It's a car that can do everything, but you can only have it as a second vehicle. you know, because it's not... Well, I suppose if you keep the roof up all the time, it's all right. But.
I always thought, to have back when they weren't very much money, I was thinking of doing this with a Triumph Stag. But just having, which of course is a convertible, they did a hard top for the cars that you could take on and off, like a lot of cars had over the years. But the convertible top on the Stag, like pretty much every other British sports car, up until about 2020, has a terrible, terrible roof. That putting them on up or down is about an 18-minute long exercise if you know what you're doing.
Like pitching a tent.
Seasons change in the time it takes to put the top up on a British sports car. And you'd at least lose a finger in the process, and there's always some bit you forget. And I always thought, why not have a cheap sports car, strip out the interior, make it as basic as possible, so you've got no carpet, it's got a bare floor, leather seat or something hard wearing, and then just let it rain and let the water just drip through, drill a couple of holes in the floor, and just have it as an all-weather car with no top.
I think Lotus have already done this with the Elise, actually. To some extent. But I did do it with a Series 3 Land Rover, actually, a particularly hot summer. It was a hard top, short wheelbase hard top. A kind of typical sort of farmer's Land Rover it was. Which doesn't really exist now, does it? Because they've all been restored and they're all worth money. But this
you
one
say that,
go on.
You say that. I was in Exmoor 2 days ago, and they do still exist.
Oh, really?
Literally, okay, every driveway, every driveway's got an old series Landy,
right,
and they all look proper used. But
well,
you don't
good.
See them in the cities and
no.
the and anymore. No.
No. So, no, it's particularly hot, and I thought, I haven't got a convertible. I want a convertible. So I went round with my socket set, undid the...
Yep.
I don't know how many bolts it was. That's a bolts and got a chum.
Quite
to,
a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite a lot. It's not a 10-minute job. And I tell you what, lifting the roof off, two of you, is a pretty...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly what I was going to say as well. Yes.
Anyway, I had a wonderful drive back home from there. Of course, I had to make the decision and leave the roof where I'd been. you don't mind if I leave this thing here, do you? No. And drove home. It was terrific. Really good fun. I loved that. Parked it on the driveway, went to bed, woke up in the morning. Of course, UK being UK, it had poured with rain all night. Moreover, I had to go back to where the roof was that day. It was work, actually. I had to go then. So I had to get in it with it pouring with rain and drive it back. Of course, you've got no electrics inside of any note, though, really. I mean, they were perfectly
And it's all fairly happy. High up, at least in a Land Rover. They are designed to go off-road, the old
True.
Ones, anyway.
So talking of roofs and things, design-wise, my design one then for little bits that really grate on you, Princess and the Pea. Sunroofs. So, is it sunroofs or sunroofs?
Well, you say like roofs of houses, don't you? But I suppose with the car, you've generally only got one.
There are
exceptions, aren't there? There are cars with more than one sunroof. But generally...
So sunroof.
Sunroofies. No, that's
wrong. I had very, very briefly a Peugeot 405... in sort of poverty French spec GLD.
I don't know why I went, because they're not exactly a car. You know. Oh, wow!
No, well, I disagree. They're a very good car, actually. But, with itchy, scratchy seats. It was that basic wind up windows and all the rest of it. Really good car.
Wow.
Guess what? One of those, it was a non turbo as well, 1.9 non turbo diesel. Guess what that used to do to the gallon? Because it's a big car, it's a decent sized car, 405. Guess what you'd get?
43.2.
Well, you know how we're supposed to, you know, laud modern cars, brand new cars for being, you know, so economical and whatnot. No, that thing used to do 55 to the gallon, brim to brim.
My next guess.
And we did see a couple of times over 60 out of it. This is just in normal use. Yeah, so tell me where the technology's going now, because that engine was so basic. Yeah, I think it was 70 horsepower or just over, but actually it was all right. It never felt slow. I mean, never felt fast, but it never felt slow. It was fine. Anyway, Achilles heel had a sunroof, electric sunroof. That was the feature in this car. With my height... Nah, like one hair would brush continuously, while you were driving it, and in the morning when you're taller, it was a handful of hairs. It couldn't drive. Awful, couldn't drive it.
I thought you were going to say because you are taller than the average bear, your hair got caught up in it, and every time you drove, you got jerked backwards when you opened the sunroof and propelled toward the back seat as you, you opened it and then thrown back forward when you closed it. Close the sunroof! I can't see where I'm going.
No, none of that. Nothing as exotic as that. Just that little, just touching, teardly tiny touching, you know, your hair. Oh.
It's hardly a... That's more of a flaw of you than the Peugeot.
No,
isn't
it's
there, really?
No, it's
I mean, you should have just worn thinner trousers.
I tell you another one that suffers from that. Bentley Turbo R or Bentley Turbo, Brooklands or Rolls Royce. No, not Shadow. What's the square one?
Spur.
Spur.
No, no, that's a Bentley. Yeah.
No, Spur.
Yeah, Spur, flying Spur. Yeah.
The
hey, you got one right. One point.
The square-rigged Bentley of the sort of 80s and
the one that
up
had
to the mid-90s.
Really expensive alloys that looked like hubcaps.
Yeah, it did. They were lovely. No, they were really nice wheels, actually. I like those wheels. But
a friend had a Mulsanne, and I actually did say, are they hubcaps? Because they look like plastic hubcaps, like you get on a Nissan Bluebird.
You're unkind.
Anyway, what about it? The roof's too low on that?
No, yeah, if you put a sunroof in them, forget it. Can't sit in it. Absolutely can't. Well, I mean, I can sit in it, but it's not very comfortable. But as soon as you take the sunroof out, it's because of the electrics. If you just put an old glass sunroof in, it'd be all right, but that would leak. They consume sort of 2-3 inches of height in total
because of the track that it needs to slide back and forth and the big motor.
Yeah.
In the back. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So Bentley Turbo. And in fact, the Arnage, the later one, or Rolls Seraph, they didn't learn in that either. That was the same. I had a friend, actually, who had one. And again, couldn't live with it. You know, just a tiny little brushing of the hair constantly. So you had to take it back and swap it for one without. But
couldn't get the seat to lower them.
No, that's you know, if you're over 6 foot, forget it. So it's one of the first things I look at on a car is, has it got a sunroof? Yeah, because if it's got a sunroof, I kind of think, won't fit.
Do you need something like the Daihatsu Move, then, with like a tall roof or like a Popemobile, do you?
Yeah.
In order to feel totally happy in a car.
Must be able to wear a Stetson.
Well, then, of course, in the old days, cars were designed for you to wear your hat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, they're all so tall. And I think
2CV was.
Yeah.
TCV, well, yeah. So you could dress up and still go out in it and carry the eggs.
I think we've lost something there, don't you?
Mm.
The days when you could wear like a Isambard Kingdom Brunel style hat in a car.
Yeah,
we should go back to those days. I mourn those days, Tony. I mourn them. Citroën XM, and by far not the only car to suffer from this flaw. Foot-operated parking brake. Lovely idea. So replaces the handbrake. There it is, down on the floor. It's inobtrusive. It's out of the way. It means you can have a bigger seat. You're not going to get the handbrake caught in the flowery turn up. No, that's a trouser. You're not going to get the handbrake caught in your sleeve, all that sort of thing. Bit of a pain if you've got a manual car and you've parked on a hill, though.
Yeah.
You've got to be pretty dexterous to get the brake off with your foot. And find the biting point when it's in gear without rolling backwards. Don't know if you've ever tried that.
No, well, most of them have got a release, haven't they, for the hand? But but it's still...
Apparently the XM is foot released.
Right.
As perfect. Well as foot applied.
Good car, though.
Also makes it tricky to do handbrake turns.
Yes.
Oh, very lovely car. Lovely car, yeah. But get the automatic or only park on flat ground. One of our favourites in the past, it's reminded me when you said about security, the Matra Rancho. Very early ones where the windows slid on the back. They had no locking mechanism. And leading to the review, and these were only the very, very early ones, you could just walk up to it and literally slide the window open. It said a child of five with a toffee apple in each hand could break into this car.
It wouldn't, of course, it had so little power from the 1.3 Simca engine that it could never throw the windows open itself. But
yeah, I'm presuming even under heavy braking, they still stayed shut or open.
Yeah.
But evidently you just walk up to, which was, of course, another thing with the Land Rovers, the older Land Rovers with a canvas top. You know, security measures, no.
Nil. Yeah, nothing.
Bit of rope.
I do need your help. Right, this is my biggest one, okay? Before we run out of time. What have the following cars got in common, Mike? A W126 S-Class, a W202 C-Class, a Saab 9000, a BMW E28 M535. That'll do, actually, just those. What have those four cars got in common?
They're the top four cars that Car Chum listeners have requested we never mention again.
Yes, they are. But
because they get a mention every week for Puma. I guess, well, there could be numerous reasons, but if we're talking about flaws, I mean, you've owned an example of every one built.
Yeah, I have, but...
No, yeah. They never came in pink.
They never left in pink either. I have...
Taylor Swift has got one of each. Taylor Swift's done an album about each one.
I have loved all of those, but had the same problem with all of them, with steering. Yet, three of them have got a steering box, and one of them's got a steering rack. So it's nothing to do with a steering box or rack, okay?
Is this vagueness of feel? Is this play in the steering? I mean, well, you've had Land Rovers, so you know all about play in the steering.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the 9000, let's focus on the Saab, right? Because that's the easiest one. Now, bearing in mind I'd had before that several of them had an aero and whatnot, I actually really liked this one. It was only the low-pressure turbo, which admittedly I got it to puff itself up a little more. But
A gust of wind acts against them, though, doesn't it?
And it was automatic as well. And it was a saloon, so basically it was kind of the one that no one really wanted, but I liked it.
Crossed all the boxes there, didn't
you? Yes. It was a nice car. I like that, and I particularly liked its ride and handling combo. I thought it was just right for an everyday car. It had whopping great 195 tyres on it, but nice high profile, good ride. I was working for a magazine in London, car magazine at the time, and I was commuting, so it was quite a long commute, but it was a joy in that car. Took it up there one day, parked it one day on with the steering on a lock because it was on a slight hill, you know, into the curb. Just an ordinary residential area. Went to work, came back, got in it, drove down this residential road, and you know when something's wrong within a few yards, don't you? When you really know a car.
Oh yeah.
Horrible. It had gone sort of floaty and imprecise. That's the only way, and sort of not loose because there was no mechanical looseness anywhere in the steering, but it had lost all of its communication. It sort of felt. Over-assisted, but not that wasn't the problem. It wasn't just that it was massively over-assisted. And this was the problem that I had with all of these cars at some stage or other. And everyone...
Tune in next week to find out what that problem was.
No, because I've got no solution. I've got no solution. The only solution...
Write in now if you know what that problem was.
All four of these cars, the only solution was that I got rid of them all because I couldn't live with it anymore. So you would lose that... It just... Not just a tiny bit, but any kind of directness and communication with the steering and the suspension. And to this day, I know I sound like a loon, okay, but I'm not. I've got reasonable mechanical knowledge. I've got quite an in-depth experience with cars and suspension and all the rest of it. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I know enough. And have enough experience. I and all the garages that I know and mechanics and whatnot never, ever, ever came up with anything approaching an explanation for this.
What a shame Click and Clack are dead.
the Tappet brothers.
They'd have been really useful for this.
They would have been.
Right, so you've piqued my interest now, and I'll be honest, I was fading away there, as I imagine many were. But... So you park it with the wheels turned, and then when you pull away hours later, it's gone all floaty.
Yep. And, it was flicking a switch. It was just during that day. The other ones...
Did it sort of fix itself the next day then?
No, never came back.
They always went floaty.
Yep. The S-Class, I did in-depth stuff. Like, I changed the steering box even. I did loads on that. All the suspension, the self-levelling, I did the lot. And I tell you, that one came on like a switch as well. And this one's probably slightly more explainable. This came on when I got... tires changed and the tracking done, but it went on four-wheel alignments after that and whatnot, and it just never ever right again. Most peculiar. But the Saab was the oddest.
I think it got hit or something. If you part with the wheels turned, something came past and clipped it.
If that had happened, then the steering wheel be off centre or something, wouldn't it? Do you know what I mean? There'd be some evidence of something having happened. Good suggestion, but
always parked in the same place. All four cars.
No.
And I'll be honest. What do these four cars have in common? I could have guessed for probably a billion millennia and still not come up with when I parked with the wheels turned, the steering went a bit floaty. And we've got to make these quizzes a little bit easier.
Yeah, so that's something that I live with, you know, it kind of, I still
constantly
carry
like
with
a,
me. Yeah, I still carry with me because
a burden throughout my life. Yeah,
because I never got the answer. That's the problem.
Set up a GoFundMe for that, mate.
Never got the answer. So that was, and my that's
great.
That's where the title of this episode, Princess and the Pea, came from, because my wife had to live with this not once but four times, and she came up with it, and she said, "Yeah, you really seriously are Princess and the Pea," and I get her to drive it and say, "But can't you feel that? Just feel, concentrate. Can't you feel it?" No,
no, I'm in the passenger seat, and I don't know. I don't care about cars.
Not at all.
Let's rattle through a few more. Mazda RX-8. Uh-huh. Fantastic car. Yes, it has its faults. Very, very thirsty. Had, of course, the Wankel engine, which I think worked in that case, but it's a great car. Had those, what you basically call saloon doors or clap doors. So it had a set of small doors at the back that were rear hinged that you could only open if the front doors were open, which sounds like a wonderful safety feature until you leave somebody in the back seat, who then decides they want to get out because they can't.
Without client. Yeah, you could, yes, it's, yes, you'd have
you
to be mobile.
It's got high back seats in the front. You were really struggling to get out of the back seat of one of those if there's not somebody in the front or outside to open the front door for you. You're basically stuck in there.
They're an interesting car, those RX-8s. They really are. I take issue with you slightly. They did have hot starting issues.
They had all kinds of issues. Yeah, I mean, the Wankel engine was very thirsty. It was, but they sounded fabulous on song.
Mm-hmm. Very little torque, though. It was unusual, but very good looking.
Tiny. The neck of it.
Yeah, I've driven a few of them, and actually the gear knob's quite sweet on them because it's got on the top it's got a motif that is the rotors, you know, the Wankel what do you call it, thing that's a sort of triangle, the thing
like the Isle of Man sort of thing. Nothing like the Isle of Man at all.
The thing,
that thing, yeah. That is a rotor, isn't it?
It's a rotor.
Yeah, because the rotor tips
war. Yes, that's it.
It was called the rotor. It is a rotor, yeah. That would be a lovely edit later on. That's right, Tony. The rotor. what was the... sticking with doors, BMW Mini, the first Clubman, had two doors on one side and one on the other.
Did it?
Of course, it had the longer door on the wrong side for the UK. It was made for a left-hand drive market, so you were opening the two doors into traffic. Very much like the AMC Pacer, which had a longer door on one side on the curb side if you were left-hand drive, but if you took one into a country that drives on the correct side of the road, you found you're opening your big door into traffic. This is a good one. Austin Maxi. There's been a lot of things thrown at the Austin Maxi over the years. And it wasn't a terrible car, although the early ones actually weren't that brilliant. They were getting an awful lot of issues with the Maxi, with engines coming back in for rebuilds, and they couldn't work out why. And going through parts department, it was costing them about £200 a time to get these cars redone. All sorts of issues, and they couldn't figure it out until eventually it was Alec Izzigonis, hugely famous car designer, designed the Mini, designed the Minor, etc., realised that somewhere within the engineering drawings on the dipstick they put the full mark up slightly too high. So every one of the first 10,000 Maxis was being overfilled with oil.
Really?
and that was killing the engines.
It was as simple as that. It was a manufacturing problem.
As a manufacturing problem on the dipstick.
Because
set too high.
Back then, they probably were doing it manually. Of course, now the oil will go in a metered quantity from a pump, won't it? You know, so if they tell the machine to put 5.1 litres in or whatever, that's what will go in. But
this was when they were in service, so people had bought them, put some oil in.
Yeah,
not at the. Presumably at the factory, they got the right amount. They would have done it, but as soon as once somebody drove it around for a couple of weeks, and you checked your oil as on a weekly basis, sometimes daily if you owned British Leyland cars, or indeed Fords at the time, burned a fair bit of oil. You know, they looked at it and thought, oh, that's half an inch low, pour it in.
The Maxi it wasn't exactly a sexy, gorgeous car, but it was flat floor, nice and spacious. Was it the E-Series engine it had and the 5-speed gearbox, which was quite avant-garde, wasn't it? Am I right?
5-speed gearbox and a hatchback. Hatchback was a big deal back then because it was really only the Renault 16 that came close to it.
Mm-hmm.
The Maxi was tortured throughout its design life. It was basically Isigonis was designing three cars, the Mini, the ADO 16, which was the 1100-1300,
which was very popular,
and the 1800 Land Crab, which really wasn't popular. The 1100-1300 was the best-selling car in the UK until the Cortina.
Yeah,
it's literally like throughout the 60s was the best-selling car.
If you can't picture that, think of Fawlty Towers. It's the car that he thrashes with a tree.
And, of course, clockwise as well.
Yes, indeed. John Cleese obviously
drove another one in clockwise. I don't know why John Cleese was forever associated with the 1100-1300, but anyway, yeah. But and midwives everywhere. And they used to be little police panda cars too, but we're getting off the point. I think what killed the Maxi partly was the fact that it had to use the same doors and roofline and windscreen as the 1100, 1300 and 1800. So they were a little bit stymied, really, as to what they could do.
Did they really? I thought they'd be bigger than that.
Yeah. Nope. Same centre section, which made it a lot bigger than the Cortina it was trying to rival.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, if you have a look at the front of a Maxi, can you tell I've been doing writing about Maxis recently? I've suddenly got all this newfound knowledge. But the front end of it was, I've forgotten the guy's name, but it was designed by somebody who had previously done the Ford Cortina. And he clearly looked at the Maxi and thought, just do that again, really.
Yeah, you've got standard size, whatever they are, 6, 7, 8, 9 inch, whatever the standard size is, headlights, and then the horizontal slatted grille. I can see it.
A simple bumper. It was basically sort of Mark II Cortina on the front end. The original 1485 cc Maxis suffered a few problems. They immediately came out with another one, and within 2 years, it was a pretty decent car, but the original ones were... So they did like a 1.7 version later on, whole new engine and everything, redesigned it. And it converted into a bed. You could drop the seats down completely flat. You could sleep two people in a great deal of comfort. They were a very good car in terms of that.
Talking of that, I'll give you advance notice, Mike, and the audience advance notice to avoid. One of our upcoming episodes will be about sleeping in the car. So expect more Maxi knowledge to percolate forth when we get to that.
Ooh, make a note of that, because I know what we're like when we tease things. And I bet if we listen to stuff that we did, last year, it will be, we must do a show about that. Let's do that next week. And then we never did.
No.
So any audience who are still clinging on with their fingernails will be thinking, right, that's never going to happen. And I suppose my final one, I don't know if you've got any more to throw in the pot, but the Lincoln MKC. Now, I don't know whether this is the Mark C or whether it's MKC. So apologises.
This is fairly recent.
Yeah, this is the crossover SUV.
Yeah.
The button for sport mode, exactly the same size, shape as the start-stop button for the engine, and it's right underneath.
Really? That is clumsy. Yeah.
Yes. So, quite often, you know, watch this. Clonk, engines off.
Hey,
hold on to your armrest, kids. Here we stop. got a bad press for that. And Chrysler tended to do that a lot. They did in the 50s and 60s. You had on every one of the Chryslers, mm-hmm. push-button transmission, mm-hmm. which I know we've talked about in the past. You know, you push the button for drive, the button for 1-2, the button for neutral and reverse. But they designed their dashboards. So steering wheel in the centre, and you had buttons down the left for the transmission, buttons down the right for the radio. So it wasn't entirely impossible that you go to change the radio station and stick it in reverse. I think you only did it once.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's basically all I've brought to the party.
Well, no. I mean, it was a wonderful gift, and we thank you very much for it.
Yeah, I should have wrapped it.
And what a party it was. A party you can enjoy every fortnight by subscribing. And if that's not enough car chum for you to digest, give us a go on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. As ever, thanks very much for listening and cheers to our next party. Pip, pip.